and welcome to the Hear It podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Roberts, and I'll be speaking with guests on their campaigns, insights and ideas to better engage youth audiences. I really hope you like it. This week, we're joined by Isabel Panton, Director of Student Recruitment and International at University Academy 92, a higher education offering founded by the Manchester United Class of 92 in partnership with Lancaster Uni. Not shy of doing things differently, UA 92 is definitely challenging the status quo of what higher ed can offer, so I obviously wanted to hear more and get them on the podcast. Hi, Isabel. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit more about UA 92 and why it's proving to be such a unique offer in the higher ed space.
So University Academy 92, firstly, we're in Manchester. And I think that's important to know because Manchester is absolutely booming at the moment. We were co-founded by Lancaster University and the Class of 92. So for those of you who aren't into football, they were a treble-winning team under Sir Alex Ferguson from the 1992. And they have sort of invested in Manchester and invested in education because they want to give back and share some of the leadership lessons and the lessons in life, really, that they gained from Sir Alex Ferguson. So we're really lucky that we have the academic rigour of Lancaster University coupled with the sporting and leadership excellence from Sir Alex Ferguson's time with the Class of 92. And again, our proposition is linked with industry. So where most universities are trying to sort of retrofit that partnership piece, we've built industry into our curriculum and into our student experience from the start. So we're sort of a makeup of sort of academic excellence, sporting excellence and business excellence, which is a really unique offer for our students.
And do you think being like relatively fresh in the higher education space, like UA 92, but also yourself, because this is your first role in higher ed as well, are you able to be a bit more disruptive and creative because you're less bound by like what's, you know, always been?
Yeah, so I try not to be too preachy about how disruptive we are because I recognise that a lot of other more established institutions probably have more levels of decision making and heritage to battle with. So I always say that if someone was to build an institution today, post-COVID, this is how they would build an institution because we have the agility and the dynamism needed to adapt to the needs of the workforce, the needs of young people and all people that want to study. So we're definitely disruptive, but it's a credit to really how we were founded and why we were founded.
Yeah, and talk us through that approach because the whole learning format is totally different to the normal undergrad setup. It reminds me a bit of Hyper Island just because it's so different the way you kind of stack the courses together.
Yeah, definitely. So our students study one module at a time. So rather than having four or five different modules on the go like I had when I was at university and I liked three of them and I didn't like two, so two got disregarded, they're just studying one block at a time so that they can focus on that one subject area. It just means that they're assessed at the end of that block and the assessment is not an exam, it's not a stress or a pressure test. Instead, it'll be maybe a live brief set by industry, marked by someone from Manchester United. So they're getting insight from in a real-time way from the world of work. Our students are either AM or PM students. Again, I think it's something that most students can't comprehend, but I used to go to university 9 till 10 o'clock in the morning and then maybe again 3 till 5 o'clock in the afternoon and I would nap all day. I'm a prolific napper. It took me a long time to get out of the napping habit. I'm still trying now. So our students are either morning students or afternoon students throughout their entirety of the study. So they study 9 till 1 or 2 till 6, meaning that they can make regular time for volunteering, for caring responsibilities, for childcare responsibilities, for part-time work, for sport. So the structure coupled with the timetable is really allowing our students to seek meaningful employment that will help them with their career preparedness. And then we have 6 entry points across the year because we recognise that if someone loses their job in January in retail because of the pandemic, then actually for them to wait till September to change their life through education isn't always accessible and appropriate. So we want to change lives at as many points of the year as we can, basically. And that's the whole sort of premise behind our model.
Yeah, and it's kind of bizarre that it's always like that one, sometimes two intakes a year that a lot of the universities have. And I guess it's almost looking at it from a consumer, and I know that's controversial sometimes in higher ed, but consumer perspective, because you're looking at it from what a student would actually need.
Yeah.
And
what do students sort of feedback about that? Do they like that flexibility to give them a bit more of a life?
Yeah, so like our students only know us now. So it's quite unique because I suppose they're quite subjective in a way because that's what they've experienced, but they rave about it. The fact that they have like a reliable timetable compared to their peers at other local institutions or institutions nationally, I think they've really realised the value of meaningful employment much faster, and also the value that a really rigid timetable can bring as opposed to a super flexible one that might change semester by semester. So the things that they purport to be sort of most beneficial to their studies, in my opinion, anecdotally, is always around the fact that they have that no end of year exam and the one module at a time methodology, because it just minimises the stress. Our students seem a lot less stressed than I used to feel when I was at university on campus, and their attainment reflects that, and they feel supported by the lecturers. So they actually really recognise the benefit that that sort of hyper-personalised, small classroom style of delivery really has on them.
That's really interesting. And you're growing your team of student ambassadors involved with your marketing. How are you working to engage youth voice within your recruitment? Because you've not necessarily got the breadth of alumni that a lot of other institutions have.
Yeah, you know, over the years, I can't wait to get that alumni network booming, because I think my job will become even easier, because the advocacy that I say even easier, it's a hard job, will become easier, but the advocacy that we have in our current student base and our first year graduates who've just gone into industry is spectacular. To really harness that, we have done three things. One is student ambassadors, which I recognise that everyone has in some capacity. But this year we've introduced content creating ambassadors. So just centred around content creation as an extension of our actual marketing team, which has seen really good appetite and some really good organic content generated as a result. And then I've recently hired 3 of our graduates. We have one of our graduates working in our marketing department. We really want to harness the voice of our young people and our mature students too. And we want that to come through our social media, our marketing, our tone of voice when we go out to schools and colleges. But essentially, it's getting feedback, and you know, maybe some institutions aren't in a position to have these content creator ambassadors, but what they can do is set a project brief within one of their marketing disciplines to help market the university through their lens. And that's how this authentic tone of voice will really start to come through over time, I think.
And that's so important with student marketing teams, because when I was last sort of in-house, what I found was a lot of students were able just making the content quicker, but also for the audience it was relevant almost immediately. Like, it would take us that we weren't using a certain platform at the time like 3 times as long. It's like, it's kind of a no-brainer. Why wouldn't we want to sort of pay these young people to be part of our team and get the experience? Like, it's, you know, and because you're so employability focused, that's the thing that most students sort of say they want, that work experience. It's ideal for them.
Yeah, I think virality has an immediacy that most institutions can't respond to, but students, who are their greatest asset, do have that ability to be agile, be dynamic, and to be really almost off the cuff, which a lot of the marketing and recruitment that you do in HEI doesn't allow. So it's just a level of trust, I suppose, that you have to have. And some of the things, my younger sister's 20, some of the things she sends me, I'm like, oh my God, it's a bit, I'm not sure if that's appropriate, or maybe I don't get the meme, or she talks in TikTok riddles that I don't particularly understand. But it's not for us to understand. We need to stop trying to understand. We aren't the customer. The customer, you know, our main traditional customer, they're existing in year 12 and 13 at the moment. We need to match that tone of voice and reflect what they're actually interested in.
With the cost of living crisis really hitting hard for a lot of students, what do you think marketers and communicators need to be a bit more mindful of, particularly in higher ed, to connect with an audience who will either be struggling currently or perhaps concerned about making that decision? Particularly those in widening participation, I think they're going to be the ones that are, I guess, really battling with that decision about going to uni.
I think we need to do 2 things. I think we need to bottom out any assumptions that we think people might have around debt and finance, the cost of living in regards to student accommodation, the cost of a degree in itself, and the actual value for money you get. I think for years we've relied on the fact that university is the path, and therefore we get inbound applications as a result of it. I say that as someone that's only 2 years into higher education, but you know, that's my understanding from what I've observed. So actually we need to bottom out all assumptions and start from scratch. So much of what we do in our community is demystifying debt, articulating how for the cost of X, you actually, every day, breaking that cost down per day, this is what you get when you come out of it. Something that we've really, really focused on, particularly with our digital roles more recently, is articulating the opportunities that you get when you graduate by salary. And where historically people might find that quite crass and you know, not very British to talk about money and salaries and graduate outcomes, now more than ever, that end goal has become even more important. So those two things together, I suppose, demonstrating the input and what that looks like, but also the output and how that sort of reflects on that debt journey and demystifying the sort of preconceptions around bad debt and how that debt is inherited and the value for money that you get as a result. I think that has to happen because now more than ever, we have to put the customer, the student, at the heart of this highly emotional purchase and not just rely on the fact that this is a typical trajectory out of school.
You're passionate about equality, diversity and inclusion coming into the HE space. Where do you feel some of the biggest challenges are to tackle some of the inherent issues in terms of participation of students and more broadly when we look at the makeup of student recruitment and marketing teams?
This is something I'm very passionate about, and it comes through on my LinkedIn, which people are probably bored of now, but I could go on about it all day. So the reason that our team does well, whether that measurement of well is meaningful connections or student numbers, whatever you want that to look like, whatever your barometer of success is within your institution, is because our team walk and talk and sound like the audiences that they're trying to attract. So gone are the days, in my opinion, where people can sit in the offices and try and reach out to these young people. The difference now is that you need to be physically there in the spaces that you want to exist. You need to be building trust over time, and you need to not be a typical short-term WP interaction that ends and you don't see that person again. So I have a community engagement team, maybe they're called a WP team elsewhere, but I don't think we have anyone else as a team that looks like this, who exists solely to build trust in the community. So they'll spend time playing ping pong in the youth zone, going to the barbershop, pulling up a chair and sitting down and chatting, going to the boxing clubs and doing talks on mindset and maybe even money management, organising grassroots football competitions, fundraising for the youth groups that don't have a voice, that need help. We do all of those things because we're not trying to do anything quickly. We're trying to build long-term relationships for our communities that will help generations. And I think EDI has been more important than ever in putting equality and diversity and access to education on the agenda. But in order to be the mouthpiece of that as a higher education institution, our teams have to be truly diverse, because otherwise I have this thing about you can't be what you can't see. Sometimes you can, but it's incredibly difficult. It's much easier if you have role models that you can look at an institution and think, they work there, I could go and study there. Like, I'm seeing people that look like me in front of me in my classroom. That sounds like something that's obtainable. And I think a lot of institutions are probably taking a step change in that direction, but how many people would have hired someone like me who has never been in higher education before and at the time put them into the role as head of student recruitment and admissions? I think very few organisations or institutions would take that risk. So I think people need to be a bit riskier with their teams, try new things, disrupt the status quo a little bit, which will probably not be a popular opinion, but it's the only opinion, if you ask me, in order to attract authentic and interested talent.
How much of a role does the team of 92 play within your brand? So for many of your target audiences, they might not have been born then. So how do you kind of see that legacy of what it means to connect with a youth audience from that sort of team?
So I'll be honest, when I joined, I was not well-versed in the class of 92. I made jokes about it now when I'm working with Gary that I still don't know my football from my basketball.
I love how you're saying Gary, like Gary Neville, everyone. Like.
But in all honesty, I thought, class of 92, and then when I was building out the strategy for here, for the domestic audience when I first joined, I was pretty certain that only people's parents would know who the class of 92 was, and actually we needed to use that brand to leverage the parents, guardians and influencers as opposed to the students and the decision makers. So that was my opinion, but what happened was Gary Neville became more prevalent across a multitude of platforms, far from just the class of 92 Manchester United sort of story that he had. And in turn, that allowed us to diversify our audience. So now, if you go into schools and colleges, I'm telling you, everyone knows who Gary Neville is. But the people that don't, we try and strike a balance between using that Manchester United history and heritage. And actually, where does a message land better when we talk about how much Lancaster University are our shareholders and award our degrees, and you get a Lancaster University degree certificate at the end? Where is that more appropriate than the class of 92 story? And likewise, where is it that Microsoft and KPMG and TalkTalk should be talked about more than the class of 92. So it's definitely horses for courses, which I say all the time, but we're just very lucky that the person that represents the class of 92 on the board is also particularly high profile.
Yeah, his TikTok is on point at the moment. Are there any brands or organisations that you feel do a particularly good job at engaging young people? Could be within higher ed or outside of it?
Outside of it, I'll go for. Gymshark, I really enjoy. Gymshark know who their target market is. They don't deviate. They stick to a certain age and a certain demographic, but they do it for me in a very disruptive and agile way. So they could just use their influencer model and their influencer model alone, but they haven't. They've evolved that. I don't know if you saw the recent campaign around the mannequins that they have in the flagship store, who were representative of their customers, all of their customers. I love that. I love that inclusivity. I love that sense of belonging that they're building in that brand. So Gymshark's definitely one for me. Until recently, I really liked Ryanair. I didn't like the Jordan Sancho.
I love them. Like, we were at that TikTok event recently. We're like, yeah, they're so great. And it's like, now you've turned mean.
Yeah. No, I'm not about the nastiness. But I think for me, in the audiences that we're working in, sort of Gymshark have epitomised that sort of trend, but with integrity and consistency and quality. I do really like the Aldi Lidl supermarket beef. I really enjoyed that. I've got a lot of time for it. I had a lot of time for Specsavers. But Gymshark, for me, the epitome of someone that knows their audience, that sticks with what they know, that doesn't try to be all things to all people, but does so in a way that is always current and really relevant.
Thanks for listening to the Hear It podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review and subscribe, as it really helps others find us. You can also follow us on Twitter @HearItPodcast or drop us a message by emailing info@threadandfable.com.